Sometimes things can go sour when you are running a business, right? Things change that relationship at times. So I would still harp on having set guidelines. And do we understand what exactly this job entails?
I think as business owners, a lot of times they think, oh, just HR, you're just hiring and firing people and get them set up on their account. But there's so much more that goes into it.
It's a subject that lots and lots of people need, and they either gloss over it or it's one of those push behind you, I'll get to it someday, don't know how to get started.
You need to look at the long term. It may cost just a little upfront, but it's certainly better than paying the fines and the lawsuit money and settlements that can come out of not having it.
Less stress, more time, more money. Welcome to the Cashflow Contractor interview.
Martin, you would think that it was St. Patrick's Day with both you and I wearing green today.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not.
It's a coincidence. You know, really, I feel uncomfortable even talking about our clothes.
Why is that?
Men don't talk. My daughters, both of them, have on various occasions said, oh, that's a great outfit, Dad. And I said, you know what? Don't you ever use that word in context with me. I don't do outfits, right? So
That's great.
But yeah, we're both wearing green today, and it's not St. Patrick's Day. Coincidence.
It's not. No, it's HR day. So we're going to be talking about human resources, managing people from a probably a more formal perspective than most of our audience manages people. So let's welcome Sarah to the podcast. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Martin, how did you meet Sarah? How did you connect with her?
I think a reference was Holly Pepler.
Anyway, yes.
I've been looking for somebody to talk to about HR for quite a while. I've had people in the past that kind of didn't work out. Not kind of, they didn't work out. It's a subject that lots and lots of people need, and they either gloss over it or it's one of those push behind you, I'll get to it someday, don't know how to get started. So that's what I've been looking, and I asked, I think it was Holly, whom we've had on the show before, and she met you somewhere. So I just called you up.
Yes, yeah. I met Holly actually through volunteering with Meals on Wheels and Habitat for Humanity. It's networking that way. And I had mentioned, doing HR to one of the folks, and they introduced me to Holly, and we became fast friends. And so then I was able to meet you, and I'm very thankful for that.
Here we are.
Well, we're excited to have you on. We're going to kind of go through module by module conversation about how to get started with HR and taking things a little bit more seriously as a business owner, primarily for those that are just getting started as a business or maybe really small team and really putting a more emphasis on hiring and managing employees, all the way up to, hey, we're full-fledged, scaled, we've got dozens and dozens of employees, how do we keep this thing running and protect ourselves? So we'll get there. I want to hear a little bit more about your how you got started, Sarah, really fast. Why don't you share a little bit about your story?
Sure. So I knew I wanted to do HR from a pretty young age. Believe it or not, I started out as a sales marketing major at OSU, go Pokes. But I worked at a car lot as a car salesman, believe it or not. And I did see, unfortunately, the stereotype is true about car sales. There's a lot of shady stuff that goes on, and it's something that I, did not agree with by any means. And that was kind of when I realized that, if I could get into HR, not only could I have a handle on, ethics and code of conduct and things of that nature, but you can really shape the culture of a business by having a handle on that. And that was important to me. You can also, of course, shape turnover and help save the company money and be in compliance with all kinds of things. So I realized that this was where I wanted to be. I wanted to build a place where people love to come to work, where people, again, are ethical and things are in place so that the company thrives and there's not a lot of turmoil financially or with employees, right? So I ended up changing my major and got into HR management. And then I got my PHR certification as well. I have worked in the oil and gas field, which of course in Oklahoma is kind of our bread and butter, but that's where I got my start. And I ended up, I was helping my friends grow their business. So we grew their business from just a couple of employees to over 200. I ended up going on to the hotel industry a little bit after that. And then I've also been in the tech industry. And so I have a kind of a range as far as the full-time positions. But as far as clients, I've worked in nearly every industry from manufacturing to video game studios. So lots of experience in between with different industries and different sizes of companies, yeah. Some that have no policies in place and some that have very rigid structures and bureaucracies. So I feel pretty well-rounded in that regard.
Yeah.
No, as we go forward, do most of the things you'll be talking about with HR apply across the United States, or are there a lot of them that are state specific, or maybe just a little bit of state specific, or our audience is across the United States?
Absolutely. So I work with several clients from all around the country. And when I worked in the tech field, I was working with all different states. So I have worked with all 50 states. I've actually also worked internationally as far as HR policies. So, and for example, right now, you know, you probably tell I'm in a hotel room, I'm working with a client that is in California and they're dealing with some unionization efforts. So I have a wide range as far as some of the, what I call special states that have all those extra laws. So yes, a wide range as far as different states. I've worked with everyone.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, let's start kind of at the front. We started a business where we've got a partner in the business maybe, or maybe a apprentice who's right underneath us. How should we be thinking about HR when we're that little, that small, and that fresh in our business?
I think that's a really good question. So I put a lot of emphasis on, well, let's say, so how many employees are we talking? Like maybe just
like one? One or two.
So, and a lot of times those people that we're hiring are folks that are close to us, right? So we trust them. But even then, I would still say that I have seen companies that hire folks that they're closely related to or that are friends. And sometimes things can go sour when you are running a business, right? Things change that relationship at times. So I would still harp on having set guidelines as far as, especially the job description. Do we understand what exactly this job entails? Because at some point, is someone going to go, well, now I'm doing this other job, so I should be compensated more? And they may very well have a case if they wanted to really make a fuss about that, that, hey, I'm doing a job. And then we look into, you know, FLSA, and are they technically supervising? Should they technically be salaried? You know, things of that nature. And they could really hurt a company if they decided to pursue that. So I do think having clarification on the job description, as well as training, so that folks understand the exact expectations of what they're supposed to be doing. I would also recommend, I have small handbooks and I have large handbooks, but I still recommend that just because you will fall into situations where you may have to reprimand somebody because they're not doing what they're doing. They're not following certain, you know, procedures, or they put the company at risk because they're unsafe. Or maybe they are, certainly things come up where there may be an issue, or they want to be paid overtime or something of that nature. You want to make sure that these things are in writing, and so that expectation is there and that people are signing off on that. So I would harp on that first. I would also say that just onboarding is very important, setting the right foot forward and having, again, you know, folks are signing policies in place. They know the expectations, and it sets a professional tone for the company. And again, as you're training folks and developing them, you are keeping them engaged and you are ensuring that hopefully they'll stay a long time. It has been said, and I do believe this is true, that when somebody leaves the company, when you have turnover, it does cost about 2 times their salary to hire somebody back on. And that may not be exactly monetary, but you think about the time opportunity cost, right? So as you're recruiting, you're interviewing, maybe you're having to pay some sites to find better candidates. Maybe you're having to, train for an extended period of time. That's taking someone who could be doing your operations and putting them solely on holding someone's hand, right? So that costs time, which costs money. So I think those items are very, very important. I also think the total rewards. So maybe you're not offering benefits because you're a small company, but I think the total rewards package is very important because, again, that engages the employee, that engages that retention so that hopefully they'll stay. And, you know, realistically, people can go down the street and find another job, right? There's tons of jobs out there. So how do we show that, hey, we have some good benefits. There may not be many, but here are some of the perks. And you make sure to advertise that, you know, and orientation and onboarding is a big part of that. Yeah. So I would say those are just some of the very basic items that I think should be focused on personally.
Yeah. And, those are great. So I want to really fast, there's a lot of terms that I want to make sure everybody understands here.
Sure, obviously.
I think you understand guidelines and job descriptions. I think people get that. And the reason why you want that in place is so that it's really clear what they're doing. So that if you do terminate them and you say they weren't doing their job, you can say, well, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, they didn't do that. And it just protects you, right? Handbook. I think people understand handbook, but can you just give us like a really quick bullet point overview of what's inside of a handbook, even a small one, not the massive one for huge companies?
Right. And handbooks, you know, I tailor them and customize them to the specifications of that company. So if it's a smaller company, you're right. It doesn't need to be, you know, grand and ridiculous. But some of the really important items would be, you know, a sexual harassment policy, a policy about, you know, to make sure you're taking breaks, especially with certain states, they require it. And if you don't take it, they need to sign a waiver that they're okay with taking that. I mean, it's a pretty big deal. You want to make sure that they're signing off on, you know, just is there PTO? Is there, you know, what is your policy on call-offs? What is your policy on just some of those really basic items so that there's an expectation there? I have some handbooks, you know, that are just like 9 pages long. And for example, if you're in the manufacturing industry, you might want to focus more on safety protocols, right? As opposed to if I'm in hospitality, you might want to focus more on, you know, food and beverage safety or cleanliness of the room and hygiene and things like that. So obviously it would be tailored as far as what policies to put in regarding the industry and just the size of the company.
And when you update this handbook, excuse me, when you update this handbook, you want to send it back out to your employees, have them sign it, definitely during onboarding, but maybe if it's significantly updated, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime there's an update, you want to make sure to administer that. And the acknowledgement says that not only have I received the handbook, I agree to abide by the policies. So there's two items there that they need to sign off on as far as the acknowledgement form. Another piece that is important to me is, you know, I have clients that have multi-state things going on. And so I do have state addendums and those need to be updated. As you know, lots of states like Washington, Oregon, New York, New Jersey, Illinois are constantly changing their laws and what they expect. For example, I had a client that had just come on, but they didn't realize that New York had just passed a law that you have to offer benefits, but it has to be through, I believe it was MetLife. They were going through a certain private company, not through the state. It wasn't coming out of state paychecks. So they didn't know that. And they ended up getting fined quite a bit because they didn't have that, you know, they just didn't stay up to date on those things. And I think the important thing for HR is to read the fine print and to educate. I feel like that's what my job is, to read the fine print that nobody wants to read, right? And then educate on what that is. So
then you mentioned onboarding. Really? And I want to make sure that we understand that. So from my perspective, when I'm talking to people, maybe even yourself, Martin, I see onboarding as almost more of a training aspect and really getting them bought into your culture. And that is it. But I think you're talking about a standpoint of like, here's your equipment, here's your software accounts, here's how you access your paycheck.
Here's your W-4
handbook. Is that right? Is that kind of the onboarding that you're referencing?
I would say it's a little bit of both because I really harp on the training aspect for sure. And that is something I think is a forte of mine. And I also sell, you know, new hire orientations or training clips on certain topics. Just wanted to put that in there. Yes, I think the training aspect is important. It's also just about finding the light switches, right? Just, you know, showing where everything is and saying, okay, here's your W-4, here's your I-9. You're making sure you put it through E-Verify. You're making sure that everyone is kosher, so to speak. But yes, the training, I think, is a huge part of it. And just setting that expectation, looking like a professional company. And because sometimes if you have too informal of an office setting, there typically can be problems when you need to hold someone's feet to the fire when things get stressful. So I do think the training aspect is huge, and the expectations are huge, because again, if someone, unfortunately, if you have to reprimand them or even terminate, like you were talking about earlier, then you may end up paying more. And here's an important point. Sure, you may live in an at-will state, which says you can terminate someone for any reason, right? Well, you can, as in you have the ability to do that, but that does not absolve you from paying unemployment. That does not absolve you from paying out a lawsuit if they file a wrongful termination lawsuit or discrimination lawsuit, any of those items. So I think it's important in HR that we look at the long term. I have to look at it like chess. What is the worst thing that can possibly happen? And you need to be protected for that. I hate when I see clients that have some of these more informal settings. They've hired friends and family, and then they don't work out and they have to make these decisions. And then they end up having a case against the company, and the company ends up paying dearly. And I hate to see that happen.
Hmm. Martin, you had a question.
Two things. I know how some people listening, I know this for a fact, okay, because I've seen it so many times. They're thinking about job descriptions. And a lot of companies that don't have job descriptions, there are two reasons. One is they don't really know what needs to go in there. There's some practical stuff and there's some legal stuff. But they also tell me, I don't want job descriptions because now somebody's going to tell me, that's not my job. That's not my job, right? They want the ability to have people do more things than are nailed down in a job description. One answer I've heard of that is essentially a variation of other duties as required when requested.
Exactly. Right?
But how do you tell people, or how do you address somebody who says, I don't want job descriptions because I don't want people thinking that's all they got to do. We all chip in around here and do everything. What would you tell an employer?
No, that is a great point. We do try to, when I'm administering job descriptions or creating them, I do try to, of course, like you said, put some of that verbiage in that all duties as assigned. And the fact is, I mean, you can reprimand somebody for insubordination. You're not doing what, you know, you're being told to do by your manager. But I think it's also important from the employee perspective, let's say that they're doing something that maybe it should be a totally other job. And maybe that means when they work that other job, that there's a secondary job code, you know, and that requires something different. There are FLSA guidelines that say, okay, that stipulate, okay, if you're doing some of these duties, you should be classified as this. So I would just say that, you know, that is where some HR expertise should come in as far as assessing that job. Should it be a completely separate job? Or we can amend that job description if that's something that someone is doing constantly, right? So there's a few answers to that that I think would, again, just kind of get that more finite, but also leaves wiggle room to be a little more vague and to, you know, to have that happen as well.
Well, you introduced the second question I have, and that's for the handbook and policies and also job descriptions. Had it happen recently in one of our companies, you changed it. You changed my contract. Yeah. Well, the contract ran a year and now it's different. Well, you changed it. I don't want to change it. Well, then don't sign a contract.
Right.
So you have a right. This is a question. Do you have the right to change the job description and to change the handbook, some of the policies in the handbook?
Absolutely. And I mean, you bring up a good point that, I do new job description rollouts and new handbook rollouts all the time. And, you know, another part of that, though, let's say that specifically if the job description is changing, again, kind of like we talked about with some of the guidelines that something may need to be classified as something else, or let's say we simply just add to the job description. Another thing that I do is wage surveys. So I'm looking at, okay, if a job description looks like this and in the general area, the general industry, what are people paying and how do we stay competitive so that they don't come out and try to say, hey, I'm not being compensated the way I should be because you've added to my job description or you've changed it. So there's a lot of assessment that needs to go into it if we're changing it. But yes, if you're rolling that out, you need to ensure, of course, that they sign that new handbook policy, they sign that new job description, they're signing off on it. And if they're not, then you can go down the route of, okay, they're refusing to do the job. And so, that is an important aspect of it.
Hmm. Last question real quickly. A lot of things change when you have 50 or more employees, correct?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. What we've been talking about, and FSLA is Fair Labor
Standards
Act. Yeah. There are a lot of exemptions. A lot of our listeners, probably most, have fewer than 50, wouldn't you guess?
Probably.
Not all of them, but they still need to worry about all this stuff. You're not exempt because you have 25 employees.
Correct. Yeah, that part doesn't matter. Now, if you get into 50 employees, we get into, okay, you need to be offering FMLA, which is unpaid. There are some states.
It's family medical
leave. Act. Yes. Sorry.
Okay.
In HR, we are just made up of acronyms. All over the place. But yes, so at 50 employees, yes, you would need to look at the family medical leave being administered. You would need to look at, and then when you get to 100 employees, you would need to look at EEO-1 reporting, which is where you're reporting on different demographics to the federal government. And ensuring that there's certain special blurbs in place on job descriptions in your handbook regarding that. In fact, a lot of things some smaller business owners don't realize, especially if they're in a certain state or they have multiple people in other states, there's some verbiage that needs to be in place regarding, for example, California is requiring wage ranges in every job posting and some blurbs on that in job descriptions as well. And so that's something to take into account. But yes, the FLSA specifically applies to everyone. And then as you start to grow, there are other things that you would need to add on. And the state stuff throws wrenches in there as well. So
yeah. Well, I'm thinking for most of our listeners, and I think they would agree that all these things make sense. They probably don't have a lot of time to work on some of this stuff and probably not the know-how. Obviously, they can hire someone like you to help them as they gear up, as they get started. I want to kind of understand from your perspective, where do you see kind of that sweet spot of, hey, I'm going to outsource some of this to, no, I need to actually probably bring someone in full time. And I think the big thing that I want people to recognize there is, I think as business owners, a lot of times we don't understand the effort behind the ask. And I know this just from my sister starting with a company when they had just a handful of employees and now they're, over 100 and plus. And there's just so much work involved. And they think, oh, just HR, you're just hiring and firing people and,
right.
get them set up on their account. But there's so much more, just like you've mentioned, that goes into it. So with all that effort that goes into this task, when is it proper to outsource versus the benefits of having that full-time person and still even getting some strategy outsourced on top of that?
Yeah, I honestly think it's important to outsource at least just, for example, the trainings, and like I said, I'll offer certain trainings that can be recorded and just disseminated and updated every so often. As well as, just reviewing the policies that you have, which is something that I do often as well, just reviewing what you have, making suggestions. So there can be just some light touch from HR. I also am on call as things are needed, because of course, sometimes things come up, right? I think honestly, when you get to about 20, 30 employees, where you really probably should think about having full-time HR or amp up the amount of hours that you're working with your consultant, because again, more things tend to come up and you just, there's just a little bit more that goes into having that many employees. Of course, you can delegate to managers to do all of those items, but I think you're right. A lot of people forget about all the facets of HR. It really is vast, and that's why I love my job. There's so much variety, right? But, it, you got to think about it. Like, would you rather have, when you have 20 or 30 employees and you have managers that are managing them, wouldn't you rather they spend more time on operations than this other HR stuff? And, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have, you know, an HR administrator, an HR manager, HR specialist, even that may not be paid as much, let's say, but are still on top of some of those items that can take some of that back from the managers so they can focus on their operations.
Hey, Cashflow Contractors, wanted to take a second to talk to you about a new company that me and my team have started called DemandCast. And I want to see if Martin knows what DemandCast is. What is it?
DemandCast is a podcast in a box where all you have to do is show up and be the podcast content contributor. Everything else gets taken care of. It's how we do our podcast. And sine qua non, without it, we wouldn't have a podcast, or at least I would.
There you go. DemandCast is basically everything you need to start your podcast, get it off the ground, and then keep it rolling. It's what we do for the Cashflow Contractor, as well as a few other shows, and we're adding shows right now. So if you are interested in starting a podcast, or you know someone who would like to be a thought leader and get more content out there, please reach out to us. There's a link in the show notes where you can get started with a quick discovery call to learn more about our services and how we see a great fit for you moving forward with the podcast. Back to the episode. Yeah, I think something that for our audience that really applies to this is subcontractors inside of that. You know, you have the employees, but you know, for some of our listeners, for every one employee they have five subcontractors. So what is the process of managing? Let's talk about managing those subcontractors. Obviously, they're not employees, and it's really important that you distinguish that they're not employees. Yes. I know Martin's got some stories around that. Let's kind of distinguish how we can best manage our contractors, support them, what processes we need for them, contracts, those kinds of things that still may fall under the HR role.
Certainly. So I would say that the consultant reviewing those contracts is going to be huge because, and I've seen some horror stories as well where some subcontractors have said, well, there was even a lawsuit recently, for example, where there were some contractors, I think it was Microsoft, and they were getting like t-shirts, like swag from the company. And they actually won a court case that said that, no, you have to call them employees because they're getting these little
perks. Yeah, swag.
Yes. Oh, yes. I swear. Yeah. Truth is stranger than fiction sometimes, but yeah, it's very important to look at, to assess the contract itself, as far as the consultant, as well as, again, just looking at, okay, sure, we want to treat them well, but, you know, we need to be very careful about every little thing that, I mean, even the trainings we're giving them, if we're having them sign off on anything, this really needs to be airtight to make sure they don't have cause later to say, I should be receiving benefits. I should be part of the company. I should be an employee as opposed to a contractor.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Martin, why don't you share with our audience the story of someone who was paying people as 1099s and then had a ruling that they should have been paid as employees?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Everybody did it. So he had everybody's a 1099 and literally said, hey, I have to keep track of overtime and let those guys pay their taxes, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I can't remember. I have to print it off. So I can't remember all the penalties that he paid. I mean, he paid their unemployment, right? I mean, not unemployment, their FICA FUTA-SUTA 14. Right. He had to pay that. He had to pay interest on that. He paid fine on the taxes that he did. I can't remember everything.
I remember a pretty big number. And there was another one, a lady business owner who was doing the same thing. And it was like, I want to say like 70 grand per employee and per contractor employee she ended up having to pay.
Wow.
Yeah. So. And people just do that all the time. And we don't really need to make this a form on 1099 versus W-2, but they say, well, he's got his own truck. No.
Yeah. No.
Well, I mean, does he have an LLC?
There's another thing that goes in the handbook, driving your own vehicles and insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you're agreed to that you're going to pay for your insurance. And you know, all that kind
and
of
stuff. And if you get an advance, do I have the form filled out so that I can take deduct that from your future checks? And yeah. Anyway, on the 1099 thing, many, many, many 1099 folks are really W-2. And the fact that they have their own chainsaw and a truck doesn't do it, right? Do they bill you? Do they have an LLC? Do they carry their own liability insurance? Do you essentially tell them when and where to be? Or did you give them a contract and say, get that bridge built by Friday, and then they schedule it? And the one that I really like that's in the SSA form from the IRS, do they have a significant chance of losing money? Right? If you're just paying them for the hours, they're just getting paid. If they're really a contractor and they agreed to build that bridge by Friday and they mess it up, they can lose money. So anyway, enough about that. But here is really key for me, what I want people to hear, because I want to hear it. Let's imagine that we have a fully fleshed out employee handbook, and on the front page is an index. What's on that index? And maybe in the order of, hey guys, we can do these one a month, one a quarter, some reasonable amount to make progress to build towards a fully functioning HR handbook. But I don't want to freak you out because I know you're already working 60 hours and we're not going to go try to write it this weekend. So what would that index look like and what priorities? Is that kind of what you're thinking too, Khalil?
Sure.
I would say, you know, starting out with a welcome, a forward, maybe you talk just a little bit about the company, you know, the history, the owners and, you know, your commitments. Maybe you have a vision and mission, maybe you don't, but just a little bit about the company there. And then, you know, talking about the work environment, maybe you have a section on, or you definitely should anyway, just equal employment opportunity, workplace harassment, Americans with Disabilities statement, talks about conflict of interest, and maybe you're smaller, maybe you don't want to put that in there, but I certainly recommend it. Maybe you talk about outside employment, because some people have another job and then that comes into conflict, right? Confidential nature of work. That is very, very important because you don't want some of your company secrets or anything that even an outside contractor, you know, having access to some of your information, you want to make sure you have a very airtight confidential nature of work policy. You want to have an employment section. At will employment, you're going to talk about that. Maybe you run background checks, but you want to have a section on that. If you're keeping personnel records, that would be under that as well. Talking about employment categories, so the expectation between full-time and part-time employees, or you know, anything along those lines. You know, are you expecting people to answer emails when they're off or be on call? You might encompass some of that there, which goes into working hours. So setting those expectations, or maybe there are no working hours, you know, you want to specify. Recording hours worked. How does that work? Overtime, you want to put in there just somewhere, hey, this is the overtime we pay in accordance with FLSA, et cetera. We talked about this, break periods, rest periods, lunch breaks. If someone's working on tips, there's, you know, a section on tip reporting. Compensation, I have a section on that. So this will talk about if there are performance reviews, paychecks, when they go out, and where you can get those, right? And you may have something on direct deposit, how to set that up, if you even have that. I also, of course, have something on associate benefits. I know not every one of our clients would have that, but just talking about eligibility, coverage. Are there, you know, expenses? How does that work? Expensing things, you know, are there holidays, holiday pay? Is there any, you know, personal time off? What are the call off procedures for that? Right. A section about workers.
What is call off? What's call off procedures?
So, for example, you might want to set parameters around if you're going to be late for work. Or if you're not going to show up to work today, you need to call this manager within 2 hours before your shift, or it's a write-up, or it's not excused. Or
you're not calling somebody off. You're calling if you're you're going to be off.
That's my apologies. Yes, but that's
call, if something. No, that's not you. Call off the dogs.
Protocol to miss work. No, that's a good point. You know, I certainly could have elaborated on that a little more. And then, you know, just talking about workers' compensation, you know, the procedure there. Do you have a form to fill out, or what vendor do you need to call if there's a thing, and when do they need to report it? You know, as soon as it happens, hopefully. You want to talk about Social Security and FICA, and that comes out of your paycheck, or maybe it doesn't, right? And, you know, so there's some of that. And then just on the job stuff. So I have several different policies that I put into this, you know, customer and vendor relations, rules of conduct, attendance, or, you know, policies, appearance, if that's applicable, internet and email and social media use. That's a hot topic, obviously, these days.
Oh, yeah.
Use of personal equipment, kind of like we were talking about earlier, right? You know, or if you're using company equipment, what does that look like? Let's see. There's a smoking section, department meeting expectations sections. Let's see. Expectations of privacy. You know, do you reserve the right to search their locker or their car if there's suspicion about something? And then I have a termination of employment section, which talks about resignations. What is the protocol to go about that? Dismissals and what that may look like. Post-resignation termination procedures. And some of these things are going to mention, you know, is your PTO paid out upon your departure? Or, for example, in California, there are guidelines around if you're leaving the company, this is how fast you're going to get your paycheck and when and where, right? You're also, of course, going to talk about COBRA and when that will be sent out to you, how that's sent out to you, and who to contact if you don't receive that. And I have a pretty lengthy drug and alcohol safety policy. That's the last section on this particular one. So those are the items that I would be going over.
Lots of things that no one's thinking about when they hire someone for the first time or their fifth employee. They're just like, yeah, man, here's the job site. Show up. Let's get going.
Yeah, we didn't even get to job descriptions yet.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
No, I think you made the point exactly that that's a whole lot of stuff we don't know about. I don't know if you do that off of a checklist, but anyway, you have those items and you can chunk them out and begin to build them and put them together over time. It's not as good as having it all on day one, but you can also actually maybe get it done.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think for a lot of listeners, you know, that the handbook's something that they're going to grow into. They probably aren't going to fork over a huge amount of time and money to be able to get it done right away. A lot of times just because they've even thought about any of that stuff and there's not a protocol. So they'd have to be making new protocols from thin air to be able to do that. But I think something that people, I think, are interested in is how they manage all this. Obviously, it's great to outsource it. It's great to have someone full time on, but even that's a lot for one person to manage. And so a huge piece of this, just like with other parts of our business, is software that allows you to store all this information, and it makes it easier to execute on a termination and getting out PTO or vacation time, billing, tracking hours, just all of this stuff can be done through software. And you're versed in several pieces of software, and I am very interested because I love software, but I'm not very versed in the HR aspect. I'm familiar, but I'm not well versed. So kind of, I want to hear, let's talk about like that, you know, less than 10 employees. What's a good software tool that they can use to really manage their HR processes from payroll to benefits to tracking time, and any other policies, signing forms and contracts, all that kind of stuff?
That's a great question. So, and I've worked with several. So there is a difference between a PEO, I believe it's Professional Employer Organization, which is essentially like a baby HRIS system, which HR information system. And those HRIS systems, as I think we were discussing a little earlier, but they can be a little more costly, right? With ADP, pretty exorbitant. And just between us, I'm not a huge fan of ADP. But although I've worked with it and I'm well-versed in it, but I'm well-versed in the PEOs as well. So there's PEOs that are much more cost friendly. And some of those are, for example, Gusto. There's also Rippling. There's Bamboo HR. So some of those are best for some of those, you know, 10 or 15 employee organizations. There's also HiBob. A lot of people haven't heard of that one, but it's really fantastic. And so that one, you know, it actually, I believe all of them, you can purchase the different modules. You don't have to have the whole package. So mm-hmm. if you're not offering benefits, you can just do the payroll through it. And maybe you can see your W-2s and pay stubs in it, kind of thing. So, and maybe it does PTO. So that's the nice thing about those is they're much more cost effective. And you can kind of pick and choose which items you would like to have in there.
Okay, excellent. And I guess my next question is, can you give us a sense of pricing around all this stuff? Like, if we're just starting out, what is it going to cost us to work with an outsourced HR person? What should we be expect? What's something we can budget for to realistically get the help we need to implement systems for our HR? And then all the way to maybe like software, what is that going to look and cost?
So that's a good question. Some of those softwares, depending on what you're using, they will have you pay per, what is it? Per employee per month, PEPM. And so, and that might just be a couple dollars per employee per month. And then, but you're paying like a, I don't know, maybe around 10,000 or so upfront, something, and maybe less. And I do specialize in implementations and integrations, by the way. So okay. I have worked with vendors as far as not just demoing, but putting together presentations for owners of companies to say, hey, here are the features of this. Here's a chart on all the features of the different ones. Here's the pros and cons of each one. And here are the prices between them so that you can make an effective decision there. As far as the consulting aspect, I try to tailor that to how big is your company? What are your needs? I tend to work with folks as far as being on call. I can do an hourly rate. Maybe that's $100 to $200 an hour. And maybe there's a minimum of hours that I work for you. I would make sure to quantify that in the contract that we have so that you have that expectation that you're getting at least this many hours from me, or we can just do this hourly rate, you know, and go from there if I'm just reviewing things occasionally. There's also, you know, as far as pricing of, let's say, a handbook, it can start from maybe it's a smaller handbook and I am creating that for you. It could be, you know, anywhere from 500 to 1,000, even for the most robust. So, I would say each project is a little different. And let's say I'm doing job descriptions, right? And we want something that's robust, but I would say starting around $50 a job description, and I would review that over time. I would also let the employer know as it needs to be updated, and we establish that kind of relationship. So it can vary, obviously, between each of those items. You know, are you wanting me to keep reviewing this? Are you wanting just this right now, and we'll come back to it later? Are you wanting me to be on call? So, but those are some of kind of the starting ranges for each of at least my services.
No, that's great. That's great. And I think that's something that people can get with and understand how they can grow into for sure. But like Martin and I talk about all the time, especially for the people that don't have a lot of employees, as far as they, like labor becomes their biggest cost at a certain point when they start adding. And you have to make sure that you're charging and getting a profit. Because if you're not doing that at the small size and then you start to grow, you're not going to be able to afford things like this. You're not going to be able, and you're going to be stressed out constantly, and you're going to be losing money essentially. So something we always talk about and being able to do this is having a profit allows you to be able to do it. So
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that's why HR, I think, even just if you're having a consultant, becomes so important, because you need to look at the long term instead of like, okay, you know, oh gosh, I have some of these expenses up front to get some of these things done. I'd rather put this off. But if you put it off, like we talked about earlier, and let's say someone resigns, they're unhappy, or you have to terminate somebody, then you have all these costs later because you didn't set these guidelines, you didn't have these policies in place, you didn't set these expectations. Now they're filing for unemployment. Now they're filing this wrongful termination suit, and you're ending up, or, you know, you didn't have a consultant look at, like I said, your benefits that you're offering or your state expectations, and you didn't know that you're supposed to be going through this avenue to do XYZ, you end up paying all these exorbitant fines that you could have avoided if you had had somebody just review or just be on call for some of these items. So it's an HR. It's definitely about looking at that long term. And it may cost just a little upfront, but it's certainly better than paying the fines that can come out of, and the lawsuit money and settlements that can come out of not having it.
I have another specific question because these things rattle in my mind. You are not an attorney. You're an HR professional. I have some clients who work with contracts. I mean, I guess probably a lot of what you do in essence is a contract, but they literally have employment contracts. Are you comfortable reviewing those and looking through them?
Absolutely.
You don't have to be an attorney to do that.
Correct. But
you have to understand HR and the law. But
very much so. And I will say that my handbooks that I've looked over, my handbooks that I have created and that I currently have, and my job descriptions, as well as contracts that I've reviewed have been reviewed by attorneys, employment law attorneys specifically. Okay.
Another specific question, at least in Oklahoma, can you pay people by the unit? In other words, I've got clients who do this and get productivity up so much. Everybody gets paid so much per cubic yard of concrete that gets laid. As long as that is more than minimum wage,
yes,
in overtime. So
correct,
you can do that. Doesn't have to be a professional. A lot of people want to pay people salaries as well, who are clearly, matter of fact, can you, it's a specific again, but I know you, not everybody is eligible to just be paid a salary. Oh, it's so much easier. I'm just going to give him $2,000 a week. Well, can you just do that?
So,
and
as
legally?
So there are a lot of factors that go into that. And again, the FLSA is also kind of clear on which jobs you can do that with. So I definitely would recommend, again, you know, depending on what industry and what jobs they're doing, that you're having someone look over that, because theoretically it gets dicey, right? Going back to kind of what you were saying about by unit, you're absolutely right. It does need to be at least as long as when they're, let's say they worked 35 hours this week, their check needs to make sure that it's at least above minimum wage, right? Or if they had any overtime. You know, some things I would recommend is doing, you know, maybe there's a base wage and then, you know, there's X amount per units you put out on top of that, just to kind of tighten that up, right? And I would say the same as far as I personally wouldn't use the $2,000 a week or whatever. I would try to get it to look a little more finite, and again, decide whether it is, this job starting to look like it may need to be classified as salary, depending on the job description and the industry and what they're doing, or does it look more like it needs to be an hourly wage? So there's quite a few factors.
And actually, $2,000 a week is about $100,000 a year, which might put them in managerial territory.
Exactly.
So they,
exactly.
But my point being, $1,000 a week, they're, whatever it is, they're just trying to not have to mess with all that. I mean, I'm thinking of specific people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the things they're trying to not mess with are the laws that are there that you have to deal with. They're just trying to say, oh, it's a salary. And if I'm correct, some of the things, just for listeners, managerial position, sales position, what am I missing? Professionals, a doctor, things like that, kind of in broad terms, are eligible to be salaried. A janitorial service worker is not, probably.
Correct.
But anyway, so there are specific reasons. You can't just go do that stuff.
Correct.
Excellent. Well, this has been fascinating. Thanks for sharing so much and for giving real expertise to this topic. I think that our audience needs to remember some of these things because I'm sure they've heard it before, but just haven't acted on it. And it's so important. So how can people get in touch with you? What's the best way, Sarah?
So I currently am doing a little bit of rebranding as far as my company, but you can certainly get in touch with me at my phone number. So you can also, of course, reach out to Martin and he can give you my contact info. But my phone number is 918-629-3820. You can also reach out to Martin and he can send you my way. And hopefully we'll be in touch. I look forward to hopefully helping out some folks that have questions.
Absolutely. We'll have that in the show notes for our listeners. Thank you so much for your time, Sarah. It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah, you as well. Yeah, thank you for having
me. Sarah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're up early out there.
Yes, you are.
I am. Yeah, but I've got a long day ahead of me, so I planned on it.
A good deal. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Cashflow Contractor. Check out our website in the show notes or visit thecashflowcontractor.com.